Well, that was the apogee. That was the peak of the grand achievements, the Seattle Summit. Let's go back to the one that immediately preceded it. The one that immediately preceded it was the passage of NAFTA, the executive version of NAFTA, in mid-November. What was going on right at that period, right before the House vote and right after it, is extremely interesting and revealing. There was a kind of crescendo of hysteria building up among political leaders and in the press, which is a little bit unusual. Usually the political leaders and the press commentators try to repress their class loyalties. They don't want them to be too much on the surface. They try to take a pose of being above the fray. But this time that didn't happen. It all came out in the open. Actually, the New York Times even used the phrase class lines. I don't think I've ever seen that before in the press. It's one of the things we're not supposed to say. Too much was at stake, and it was impossible to keep it quiet. In the days before the vote, days immediately before the vote, you recall that Clinton was speaking publicly about, quote his words, the real roughshod, muscle-bound tactics of organized labor. The raw muscle, the sort of naked pressure that the labor forces have put on, involving pleading based on friendship and threatening based on money and work in the campaign when they approach their elected representatives. You obviously never see a corporate lobbyist sinking that low. There were front page stories which featured the president's call to Congress to resist the hardball politics of the powerful labor interests. Business was reeling from the onslaught, you know, to barely face the terror of the mob. Anthony Lewis wrote an article in which he denounced the labor movement as backward and unenlightened. The crude, threatening tactics used by unions to make Democratic members of the House vote against NAFTA underline that point. Labor was driven by fear of change and fear of foreigners, really dangerous people. The Times had an editorial the day right before the vote, listing the that little box in the editorial listing the representatives from the New York area who had announced they were going to vote against NAFTA, and next to every one of them, they listed the contributions they had received from labor in their last political campaign, and the Times pointed out that that's rather ominous. It's an unsettling pattern. It indicates that maybe these people aren't voting their consciences, but are just being threatened by the crude, threatening tactics and the raw muscle of labor. Well, as a number of the aggrieved representatives later pointed out, the Times had not listed corporate contributions to representatives, nor, for that matter, had it listed attitudes of Times advertisers towards NAFTA and asked whether that suggests an unsettling pattern about their enthusiastic support for it. But to criticize the press for this is a little bit unfair for several reasons. For one thing, it's kind of unnecessary to point out to discuss corporate contributions. That's like reporting on the fact that you breathe air when you walk around. I mean, if that's the way the country's supposed to run, it's supposed to be run by powerful business interests. That's taken for granted. So it's no, you know, it's no threat to functioning democracy if corporate lobbyists twist people's arms and pour huge amounts of money into the campaign and so on. That's just the way it's supposed to work. It's when labor tries to get involved, it's when working people try to become involved in influencing legislation, that there's a real threat to democracy and you have to get hysterical about it. Furthermore, it's, again, unfair to criticize the Times for not pointing this out, because they did indeed have a front page story comparing labor lobbying with corporate lobbying, in which the reporter Michael Wines accurately pointed out that there was just no comparison. I mean, corporate lobbyists were in, you know, fancy suites right next to the House floor with all kind of fancy telephones and appurtenances and celebrities all over the place. Labor, they said, you could find a couple of blocks down the road in a boiler room somewhere without any telephones and so on. They quoted one corporate lobbyist who was in the Carter administration is looking at this and saying it's going to be a complete blowout. There's no worry about it. So they did tell the story accurately. It was a slight problem. The story was published the day after the vote. But again, it's unfair to criticize them for that. The newsroom is a busy place and things sometimes fall between the cracks, and so on.